The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
George Brockler back with you here, hour three of four on 710 KNUS. I'll be with you till 10. Charlie Kirk after that. A guy named Prager shows up sometime around 11. Maybe a dude named Gorka. And then we go live and local with Deb from 3 to 4. And Jimmy S. covering for, I honestly don't know what's happening. Somebody told me that maybe Stefan had hand surgery or something. And I presume it's like a facelift for his hand. If you've ever seen his hands, I mean, he's desperate to keep them looking as supple and as effeminate as they've ever been. He was a hand model earlier in his life before he turned to the news. A lot of people don't know that. And I imagine this is some sort of restorative surgery. Obviously, best of luck to him in recovery for that. But Jimmy S. will be here from 4 to 7 with us right now. We are on the show with one of the guys that we've had on a bunch because he's such a super investigative reporter for the Gazette. But also this story has been going on and taking different turns for years now. Joining us to talk about it, David Magoya. Sir, thanks for joining us.
Well, good morning, George. How are you?
It's been great, by the way. I'm glad to be back in the saddle. I continue to read your stuff here. I was abroad when this story broke, so I was anxious to be able to talk with you about it before someone else really got into it. Have you talked about this everywhere? I like this story quite a bit.
No, I haven't. Actually, I noticed the last couple of days that you were away. I was listening to John riding the saddle yesterday, and you know, I said, wow, all right, George is gone. Where's he at? So you took a little R&R. Good for you.
No, not R&R. It was a military duty in a place called Jordan.
Nice. Yeah. Well, there you go.
I wish it was a little more tan.
I'm sure you brought, yeah, you brought your tan home. There you go.
Yeah, you've seen me. I am translucent. There is no tanning going on. There's a combination of colors that are white and pink and red, and that's about it.
That's right.
Now, you started this story a long time ago. I imagine anybody that's been listening to the show for any period of time recognizes your voice and the topic that you covered. But can you do us a favor? Just set the stage for how we got to this latest release of information about the investigation of the former Chief Justice.
One of these days, I'm just going to write it down and read from this.
I know. We should just have an auto-recorded thing that we can play.
Oh, boy. Simply put, 2019, I broke a story that said the former chief of staff at the Supreme Court Administrator's Office, or the State Court Administrator's Office, was given a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract. And she was on the way out the door. She was being fired for financial problems that she had. And instead of being tossed, she ended up landing this big contract. That was in July 2019 when I broke that story. February of 21, a little bit later, we broke the story that the former state court administrator, Chris Ryan, he had resigned at the time of my first stories, said, hey, guess what? That contract was a little more than you thought. In fact, she was threatening to go with a lawsuit. In a memo, she was going to put out all these allegations of judicial misconduct that were never handled either appropriately or at all. And if you fire me, I'm going to sue you. So instead of being sued, they gave her that contract. That's what started the, and in that meeting was supposedly the Chief Justice. Well, he was in the meeting. What the supposedly is whether or not the Chief Justice actually approved that quid pro quo deal. So that's how we end up where we are. And everything hit the fan when that story broke. And that's been since February of 21.
Now, the story has taken some turns. There have been some investigations. Some people have left employment. Contracts were canceled. At some point, somebody hired an outside agency to investigate the potential involvement of the Chief Justice. Who did that hiring and who did they hire?
Well, there were three investigations that did that. Two inside the Judicial Department itself, legislators put together and lawmakers put together by the various branches of government, put a committee together to decide how we can investigate this. They hired two different companies, one of whom was Bob Troyer, the former U.S. attorney here in Colorado. I know you know Bob.
Yep, no Bob.
He did one of the investigations, and then there was another investigation launched by the Office of Attorney Regulation Counsel. I know you know who they are. They're the guys that oversee licensing for lawyers in Colorado. And that the first two investigations came out, said nothing to see here, people, you know, really toxic environment, bad place to work, a lot of crazy people running around. But the Chief Justice, all good, didn't do anything wrong. And this latest investigation through the Office of OARC, they hired two lawyers out of Illinois that do a lot of attorney regulation, licensing, investigating. And their findings after a year and a half, that gets turned over to what's called the Legal Regulation Committee. That's a group of 11 people, lawyers and non-lawyers, that are put together by the Supreme Court. And their job is to review complaints that come in about lawyers. Don't forget our justices are all licensed attorneys. And they decide whether or not any charges should be brought based on the information put before them. So this independent investigators out of Illinois gave their report. I heard it was as long ago as October, but you know, nobody knows because that report's not public. Gets handed to this 11-person group in secret. They look at everything, and then they came out with their announcement this past Friday that said, you know, we just don't have enough clear and convincing evidence to prove. And you as a prosecutor would know what that means, to be able to prove that former Chief Justice Coates did anything wrong. So we're just going to dismiss everything.
A couple questions. So
that's
who,
what it was.
Who makes up this 11-person board that punted on this thing?
The Supreme Court.
And they just picked people?
They name all 11 people. Yes, they just choose them. They are volunteers. They serve for 7 years in staggered terms. And those 7 years, the chairperson of and vice chair of that committee, and it's been the same guy for over a decade, an attorney out of Boulder named Steve Jacobson, a defense lawyer. Steve has been the chair of that committee for a long time. And as chair, he gets to serve as many as 14 years.
Oh, boy.
But they are all appointed by the Supreme Court.
So, and who sets the standard by which they decide whether they can move forward? And I ask it in this context, and the language appears in your article, they don't have clear and convincing evidence. And for folks that don't know how the legal system works, on the criminal side, beyond a reasonable doubt is the highest standard there is. There is nothing higher than that. On the civil side, clear and convincing evidence is the highest standard there is. Why did they pick that standard as opposed to something more like reasonable suspicion or probable cause or preponderance of the evidence?
Well, I think, you know, it really comes down to talking about removing, taking away somebody's license to practice law. And the legal community sees that, and I'm sure other professions, sees that as a very high standard that needs to be reached in order to get to that. So if there's not enough in that, in their mind, now they're the ones deciding. So it's almost like a mini jury. If you can't even get to that level, let's just move on. And that's how they view it. Now, what evidence? Don't forget, these two investigators issued a report along with recommendations. Well, we don't get to see what those recommendations were.
Why not?
We don't know if they said, because it's secret. That's how the process is put together.
Buddy, this is so frustrating, as you can imagine. All of this paid for by taxpayers, right? You and I and everyone else listening foot the bill for this thing.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And there's no way to know what those recommendations were. For all we know, and I'm not suggesting otherwise, but for all we know, those recommendations could have been other than what the committee found. I don't know that. I'm not saying it is. I just don't know. So there's no way for us to independently read that report and say, here's what the investigators found. So all we know is that that committee said no way to prove it clearing and convincingly, which doesn't mean he didn't do anything. It's just not enough proof to be able to pursue, in their opinion.
and will never get access to that record under the current situation. You have also done a great job, David, of cataloging the reform efforts that exist. And I imagine that there are still a couple making their way through the General Assembly right now. Is that true?
Yeah, there are. That was the interim committee of legislative last year in the legislative session. Those guys took testimony all summer long, a number of hearings, dealing with the judicial discipline process. And what was particularly exciting about those hearings was that the man who stood up and made these initial allegations, Chris Ryan, whose career has been basically destroyed as a result of having done this, he sat before the committee and let them know, stood firm again to say this entire investigative process, all these reviews, all these independent everythings are all designed to have the same outcome, protect the robes. That was Chris's testimony. So out of those committee hearings have come a number of recommendations for change, one of which your listeners and everybody else will be able to take up in next year's general election with a constitutional amendment that removes the Office of Judicial Discipline, the guys that actually discipline judges, will have that independent of the Supreme Court. Right now it sits underneath them, and all the money that they operate under or operated under came from the Supreme Court. That got changed last year, but their rules and everything else still kind of sit within the rules created by the Supreme Court on how they operate. That's been a really big battle between those two organizations. And now we see legislators taking up some additional changes to that process that really all hinge on whether or not voters approve this constitutional amendment last year, because that's how judicial discipline is all put together by the Constitution.
So up to this point, without these changes in place, it's the Supreme Court that picks who does the investigation, unless I'm wrong. They fund it, and then they decide what the public gets to know about it.
Yeah, that's a little more too narrow of a view, George, but essentially,
down to its rawest form. Tell me where
I'm wrong. Well, a number of things. They get to choose the OARC, the committee that just made this decision for the OARC's office. But they don't get to decide, the Supreme Court doesn't get to decide what happens to that investigation. By extension, you might say, well, it's their people, so on and so forth. They didn't get to choose the two investigating companies, Bob Troyer and another outfit called the ILG Group. They didn't get to choose them and hire them for the investigation. That was done by a committee put together by the governor's office, the AG's office, the legislators, and whatnot. They did pay for it, but they didn't get to choose them. And when those findings came out by those two investigative groups, the Supreme Court managed to start doing some changes to the process of rules of how judicial discipline happens. So, for instance, one of the latest things the Supreme Court did is they approved the rule that they must recuse themselves from any investigation of wrongdoing allegations against the judge who is either a sitting Supreme Court justice or a former justice, such as Justice Coates. Previously, they were allowed to sit in judgment of their own.
Wow.
And nobody ever changed that. So part of this whole thing is in an effort to kind of make this much more transparent. And you got to remember, George, this is a branch of government that's much more independent than the other two. I know you know this. But, I mean, they're not even subject to our open records laws. And I know that's a thorn in your side.
Oh, yeah. That goes
way back.
Quite a bit.
So this was really the first time that anyone had really started lifting up the robe, so to speak, and having a look. And what's been it's been a very reluctant, very resistive process in changing how the judiciary looks at itself and how the public is allowed to see what actually happens behind the curtain.
Is any of that CORA stuff going to change under all the reforms that are being proposed?
I don't know. I've heard some rumblings, but you're talking about a really, really difficult place because the judiciary is such a protected area. probably for good reason, back when it was all designed that way. So for anyone to really tackle the Supreme Court and make their world public under the same rules as all the other branches of government, that's a tough pull. Now, don't forget, that's not to say there aren't laws in place that allow the public, you and I, to take a look at what's happening in the Judicial Department. It's just not through the Colorado Open Records Act. It's called through a law called PAIR, what it stands for, like Public Access to Information and Reporting something, P-A-I-R-R. That's their version of CORA. And there are some parts of it that are a little more...
Who decides whether...
The Supreme Court.
Yeah, so, I mean, at the end of the day, when you have a problem with any other branch of government, your recourse is, well, I'll go to court, and I'll get a shake there from a judge. When it's the court itself, where do you go?
Well, there was a part of this whole story where the Discipline Commission was challenging the effectiveness, the constitutionality, for want of a better way, of what the Supreme Court was doing in their efforts to investigate. The commission was basically told, so sue us, knowing that the ultimate decision on whether or not it's legal was going to be by the very people that were stopping them.
It feels like in any other setting, the obvious answer would be, that's a conflict of interest. You can't have your own agency deciding and be the sole arbiter of whether or not someone gets access to that information. So, for instance, if you, as you know, David, when you make a core request of, let's say, a police agency, and they stiff arm you and they don't comply with the rules and they cheat you out of something, costly or not, you have the ability to go to court and say, I'm going to sue you under CORA, basically, because you didn't comply with this thing. Right. There's no vehicle for that under this.
There is the vehicle. The problem is it's the same vehicle. You can sue them, but the very ones that are telling you no are the ones that are going to decide that lawsuit.
I just... any chance, by the way, with these changes of the law, any chance that we'll get to see this report finally?
You know, I don't think so. I certainly, as a reporter, and my desire is to let the public know what's happening, I'm trying to figure out how that report is accessible in the public realm. It's not, it won't be released by request. It might come up to the Judiciary Committee at the legislature, but I don't know how that would happen. That it's the rules of investigating attorneys is a very restrictive process, that it doesn't become public until there are findings made as a resolution to an investigation. The finding in this case is that we don't need to look any further. There's not enough here to prove wrongdoing, and, you know, clearly and convincingly. So that's not to say that they didn't find evidence of wrongdoing, just not enough to be able to win the case if they go after it, in their opinion. So I just don't know where else it might show up. I really don't. I think this one gets put on a bookshelf and stays there.
Is this the end? I mean, I realize there's going to be the law changes and stuff like that, but like when you're looking at this and you've been on this train for years now, what's left?
The Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline, the very guys that whose job it is, they're 10 people. I mean that in the collective,
yeah, of course, yeah,
non-binary sense, of course.
Right.
They are still investigating Chief Justice Coates. I know that investigation exists from the person who filed the complaint. The commission itself is not allowed by law to disclose anything that it's working on. And under the current rules, it's still possible that that commission could find and choose to issue discipline against Chief Justice Coates, former Chief Justice. But that recommendation would have to be given to the Supreme Court, and it would be up to the Supreme Court whether to allow it to be public, private, or just dismiss it.
That, again, doesn't that feel kind of like the conflict of interest thing?
Boy, it's been rolling around. I wrote a story a number of months ago that the Commission on Judicial Discipline very plainly flagged the Supreme Court of all their conflicts of interest in this whole thing. I think that's why the court passed this recent rule that says they have to recuse themselves, because otherwise the voters, we would all have to wait until the voter constitutional amendment gets passed in order to kind of create that rule. So to their credit, they jumped in front and said, look, we're just going to take care of this now. So theoretically, they have all recused themselves from anything that judicial discipline is looking at. I don't know if they're looking at the rest of the court other than just Coates, and that would be because when the stories first broke in February of 21 about this memo and all the allegations of quid pro quo, the court made a very public statement together that they didn't believe it was true, they didn't believe it to be accurate, that Chief Justice Coates would never do something like that. So now the court has essentially broken its own rules of judicial conduct by opining on something that they could well be the arbiters of later. That was the problem. And that's still hovering out there. So I think by them recusing the new rule, they replaced themselves with members of the appellate court to review any discipline. The commission of discipline has problems with that because they said, look, this is a very collegial group of people. They're all buddies. And a lot of the appellate court people will eventually become, or theoretically, members of the Supreme Court. So the commission wanted that group of arbiters, the new people, to look at anything that the Supreme Court has to step away from. They wanted that group to include district court judges, you know, from a pool of them. And the Supreme Court didn't agree. Some legislators didn't agree. And so that's the rule we're living under now, is the appellate court would replace them. But that would only be if they bring charges. So if that happens,
and
we find out there's
a discipline charges, not criminal charges.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. Discipline against a
that criminal
judges,
ship
right?
has sailed, right? I mean, there's no chance that there's any sort of, or did somebody already look under the hood on that?
Well, there's still the FBI out there. They were investigating at the front side of this, dealing with the issue of public corruption. So, and I don't, you know, how the FBI works. I have no clue whether that thing is still floating around or not. The people I've talked to involved in this whole thing have said they haven't heard from them in a little while, but that's also not unusual. So, you know, I suppose that's still floating out there, but there was an effort at prosecuting some of the people, the former chief of staff that yes. wanted the contract, the former human resources director that was pushing for it, even Chris Ryan, the guy that blew the whistle on his whole thing. There was a recommendation to prosecute, and the Denver DA, as you might remember, basically said, you guys took too long to give this to us. The statute of limitations, we don't have enough time to investigate this, and we're dismissing it. And that all went away.
I do remember that now. And I remember, too, the Denver DA's office ended up wanting to push back and blame, in part, the AG's office. Remember that? Because the AG's office was dragging its feet and said, hey, we don't have to turn this over, and some kind of privilege claim. I can't remember what it was, but the AG's office helped slow the process down and put Denver in a place where they at least could plausibly say, we just can't do it. We're out of time.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. There was a lot of back and forth, things that were being reviewed. It was really something. It took so long for that information to make its way to the DA when it really shouldn't have, but it did. And ultimately, the DA said there's just not enough time to do this in the manner that it needs to be done. So
AG helped protect them. I'm sure they're going to say, hey, we have to zealously represent our client, but let's get real. Dave McGuire, I could talk to you all day about this. I'm waiting for the next piece here. I want to see what's going to happen. It feels like we have hit a natural endpoint on some of it, but maybe we'll get more out of that disciplinary investigation.
That's possible, but I've also got another story that'll pique your interest.
No.
I don't know if I'll be able to get it this weekend. I'm trying. We'll see. You know, it depends on how today goes, but it's possible, much more in the vein of what we were just talking about earlier.
We'll keep up the super work by a super investigative reporter, Dave McGuire from the Gazette. You can find this article and all the others. Easy to just do a quick Google search, by the way, for McGuire and Supreme Court, and then 8 billion things pop up. That's what I did. Man, thanks for joining us, and thanks for doing such great work.
Well, I appreciate it, George. It's always good to talk to you, and glad to have you back on the air, my man.
It's good to be back. I'll talk with you soon. That was David McGuire. Listen, we'll cut away for a break. I'm not really sure here what to do with this, but if you're like me, you hear David talk about these things, and you become frustrated because you're like, wait a minute. Where's the accountability? Why is there a different standard for judges than everybody else in the state of Colorado? Because that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing a different process, a different level of protection, a different level of conflict of interest that we tolerate. It's a real problem here, and it makes me wonder, and someone texted in, is it time for some sort of a citizen initiative for an independent judicial oversight committee? Maybe. Maybe it is. But maybe it's something more than that. Maybe we're at a place where we say, you know what? It's time for term limits for judges. It's time we set in some requirements so that we can limit the amount of special authority and power these men and women have. And that, by the way, that is not to say that I disrespect these people. I appear in front of them all the time. Hell, I'm going to appear in front of them tomorrow. But when you hear this description by David 3 years later, and it's like, well, we just couldn't get there from here. By the way, you're not allowed to see what we did, what we discovered, or how we made our decision. Does that feel like America to you? Does that feel like government to you that we do that? 303-696-1971. What must we do to get back in control of the judicial branch? And frankly, the rest of government, too. I'll tell you about something that Ted Cruz come up with, too. We'll have that conversation as well. George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. Thanks to Dave Magoya from the Denver Gazette. Super column from a super investigative reporter. But it frustrates me. I mentioned that before we got out of the last break here. I find myself at a place where I feel frustrated to the point where I don't know where to go from here. Like, we're going to have an incredibly left-leaning legislature try to craft some rules that make the judicial branch more accountable and more transparent. That doesn't make me feel good either, because it's the same party in power who killed off multiple attempts to expand the Colorado Open Records Act to include the judicial branch at the request of the judicial branch for years. I mean, Polly Lawrence, if you'll remember, representative from Douglas County, she brought forward two or three versions of that bill, trying to find one that the legislature and party line vote every single time. Joe Salazar and the lefty Dems over there would crush it every single time. So I'm not sure that I'm very confident that they're going to get it done here. And I know that there's a task force or a committee or whatever it is. Let's see. Let's see. But hearing this, this is a problem. I'd love for them to incorporate into the legislation a mandate that all of the documents related to this current investigation that spawned all this stuff would be made publicly available. But in the absence of that, I find myself saying, well, then I want limits on these branches of government. Like, look, we have term limits for the state legislature. We have term limits for the governor, the secretary of state, attorney general, treasurer. We have none for judges, not a single one. We have an age limit that says 72 years. Frankly, that feels unconstitutional to me. How do you tell someone at 72 years you are incapable or unwelcome to do a certain job? I mean, it's not like they're a firefighter having to scramble up a set of ladders or something, carrying a body through something. These are folks that sit around to listen, they read, they write, tend to have really long lunches. But anyway, they do all this stuff. But you could do that at 72, 75, hell, maybe even 80. And with that kind of experience, expertise even, available, why limit it to 72? But here's where we might limit it, and that is term limits for judges. The idea that somebody can be appointed to the bench, by the way, with no input by you, there's no real confirmation process like there is for the United States Senate's role in confirming judicial appointees at the federal level, nothing like that. You could have someone who's appointed to the bench at 40, and they could serve for 32 years. One, that is an ungodly amount of para. That, you're on the hook for that, too. I'm on the hook for that. I'm a para guy, by the way. So this isn't me saying I don't get any benefit from para. I hope to. Thank you, by the way, taxpayer. But 32 years of para, you're making gobs of money. The other thing is, are we that hard up for talent, for experience, for being a good judge, that we'd create a system that says, no, you can serve for decades. You're the branch of government where that matters. It doesn't matter to DA or AG or governor or legislature, but to judge, it super matters. Are they that different? Are they that special? I don't know. But then the timing is great, because some dude named Ted Cruz, who's apparently a Republican senator out of Texas, teamed up with some guy from South Carolina named Ralph. And they've offered an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to impose term limits on members of Congress. The amendment would limit senators to 2 6-year terms. That means 12 folks. And members of the House of Representatives to 3 2-year terms. That's only 6 years. And now it makes me wonder, why did they do it for just Congress? Why not do it for the Supreme Court, too? Why not say, hey, U.S. Supreme Court, I know it's a coveted position. We want to free you up from as much political influence as possible in the making of your decisions. That's turned out to be really good, by the way. But we're going to limit you to 15 years or maybe 20 years. 20 years, 2 decades seems like a long time, to be in one government office when the rest of the branches of government are all leaving at different times. So I like where his head is. But are you at a place where you want term limits and not just for members of Congress, but for judges? It's interesting because the judge thing, as you know, we don't elect judges here. They are popularly approved, but there's no contests. You'd have to work really hard to know who your judges were other than names on a ballot. Even the blue book isn't very helpful in this regard. So in those circumstances where it's you versus no other opponent, two things I want to see happen. I want to see us increase the threshold to get retained in that position. How about 65%? How about just a supermajority? If you can run unopposed for an office, nobody's done the job while you're in the office. Nobody can challenge you for the office. If you can't get 2/3 of the vote, maybe that's a sign. But beyond that, maybe we say term limits for judges. I also think a lot about the term limits for members of Congress. And I know that seems like that is a growing and popular sort of cure-all for what's going on in Congress. I'm not sure that it is. And I'll tell you my biggest gripe with it. My biggest gripe with it is it deprives me of freedom of choice. It says to me as a voter, George, we can't trust you to vote for the person that'll represent you best because you keep voting for the same morons. So we're going to put a limit on how many times you can vote for a person. So they've limited my ability to vote for someone I want to represent me. And it's arbitrary. For Ted, it's just 2 or 3 2-year terms. And I don't know why it has to be more for a senator. Why not just 1 term for a senator? That'd be 6 years. Then there'd be parity. I don't know. I don't like it. Now, I think the term limits matters. Listen, as a guy who ran for DA, I was benefited by the fact there were term limits. We're the only state in the United States that has term limits for district attorneys. And I was elected only after the person that served 2 terms before me couldn't run anymore. Now, the questions come up, would you have run against her anyway? Yes, of course I would have. I don't know if I'd have won. Did pretty damn well the 4 years before as nobody with no money, but who knows? But from where I sit right now, it could benefit me if there were term limits for Congress. I mean, I'm a big Ken Buck fan. He's my congressman. But as long as Ken's in that seat, there ain't going to be no Republican running for that seat. Maybe somebody would be awesomer. I don't know. But I don't like the idea that the law might step in and say, no matter how much you like Ken, no matter how great a job Ken has done, you just simply can't be trusted to vote for him again. So we have to force you to vote for someone not him. That just doesn't feel like liberty, man. That just doesn't feel like America. But here it is. And we have it for so many other offices. Do you support term limits for members of Congress? Why? And should we extend it to members of the Supreme Court? Members of the Colorado bench? 303-696-1971. It's a conversation worth having. I don't have all the answers. I just got some opinions. I'd love to hear yours and talk with you about them. Give us a call, 303-696-1971. Joan, Nancy, everybody else on hold, I promise I'll get to you. Can I please do you a big favor? Can I tell you about some superstars named Drs. Richter and Snyder. They're dentists, but they do so much more, and they do it out of a fantastic, modern, new building down there at the corner of Stroh Ranch and Parker Road, right by Lehman Academy. And they do everything. In terms of family dentistry, this is the place you take your family. You take your mouth and all the mouths of the people that you care about. They're my dentist. I go down there because, one, I trust them. Two, they do a good job. Three, they put me at ease. I fell asleep twice in the chair. And four, I like them. You know what I mean? Like, these aren't, I'm sure there are people out there who are brilliant tacticians when it comes to dentistry, but they're cold as ice, or they're not engaging, or they don't seem like I'm much more than just a mouth to work on. Not these guys. You'll love these guys. They're like normal neighborhood people who are out there trying to do a great job for the people that trust them. And I trust them. I think you ought to, too. When you go out there, they got a great program that provides a whole bunch of dental services over the course of a year for a discounted price. Ask them about it. It's a great program. In fact, just call them right now, 303-841-7466, 303-841-7466. Said, hey, George told me about some special program you have. How special? And then you're going to reach out and go, dang, George, that's a special program. You can also check them at TwinAspenDentalCenter.com. That's TwinAspenDentalCenter.com. Let's cut away for a quick break. When we come back, we'll honor the callers and the texters. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler, right back with you here, 710 KNUS. Phone lines are full, and I promise we're going to work through them. If we can't get through them all in this segment, we'll get to them at the top of the nine, because we love us, them, their callers. Joan, Nancy, and Alexa. I like that lineup. That sounds great. Joan, you're on 710. What do you think?
Well, I think that you've hit on a subject that women are interested in, fairness of the law.
So tell me, in what way?
I don't believe in term limits, because we have no limitations on unelected public servants. And I think that your unelected public servant does much more damage than your elected anybody.
Well, okay, but is the answer to, hey, we can't stop the bureaucrats, then we ought to just have limitless terms for members of Congress? I mean, do you disagree with term limits for a governor here in Colorado?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think if we had not had term limits, that we might have had some Republican governors that were very decent.
How so?
You know,
give me an example.
Run for. Let's see. I don't know. That's hard to say, because it's been such a long time since we had a Republican governor.
Yeah, Bill Owens was the last one.
Yeah, I know. And he was good. But I think once he was term limited out, you know, where do you go when you've been let go?
Well, and I don't know what that means. Like, where do they go career-wise? I mean, he's had a pretty thriving career out there in the private sector. He's still engaged, very influential, but I'm not sure I care what happens to them after office.
Well, I can tell you that right now that I actually filed with the Oversight Committee that sits underneath the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
About a lawyer that I had a little dispute with. And they
was his
like,
name
oh,
Randy?
No,
no, I'm kidding.
No, I'm not. No, it wasn't. It was a lawyer that the city had hired, and they were supposed to hire somebody that wasn't related to the city, but this person was actually still listing in social media that she worked for the city. Kind of an interesting thing. It shows how close-knit lawyers are and judges are, and I'm pretty sure you run into this with your stuff. You end up with some lawyers that when you get them, you go, whoopee, I got this lawyer, and they think like me, you know.
In terms of being DA or just in general? I mean, look, my greatest concern out here on the private sector side is going to some place, maybe it's Montrose, and getting hometowned. Do you know what I mean? Like, I ain't from there. Judge doesn't know me. Prosecutors don't know me. They're just out there doing their thing, and that I'm going to be the outsider dude who's brought in to try to get some outcome for a client, and they're like, who's this city slicker, you know? That's my biggest concern. Not that it's a tight-knit community. Yeah. I'm not worried about that. I'm a little over the whole sycophantish thing where we have these annual judges' dinners and stuff like that where we fawn over them like they've somehow cured freaking legal cancer or something like that. They're just doing a job.
I think that's funny because some of the freshman congressmen aren't going to go to Biden's little tea party that welcome them.
Yeah, I get all that stuff. What do you think about term limits for judges, Joan?
I would rather see a limitation on how long they can serve. So,
how's that different?
Well, somebody who gets in when they're 40 and they serve two terms, then get out when they're 55 or something, and that's actually a very productive age period. I don't think that
But it would be, in your mind, it would be different if they started at 65. You'd say, well, then you can serve longer or shorter.
Shorter.
So when you get in means how the less time you have to serve? Jeez, I don't know. How would you do that? Some kind of a sliding scale based on birthdays?
Yeah, maybe. They have pilots. Pilots have to retire at a certain age.
I'm not sure I agree with that either. And Joan, forgive me, you've been a great call, but once again, we have run out of time talking with you. But Nancy and Alexa, hear me. I'm making my word to you. And Frank, who's calling in now, I get you on the air if you hang on through the top of the hour for this last hour. That's what we do here. We do the talk radio thing, not the talk at you, talk with you. Be part of that conversation. Term limits for judges, term limits for Congress? No, I don't know. 303-696-1971. Let me know your thoughts. George Brocker, George Show, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.